It's time to eat.
Get in my belly.
Sit down and get ready to consume an abundance of fantasy football knowledge from Russ Tucker and Evan Silva.
Me so hungry.
On the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast.
Yeah, let's eat, baby. An all-new episode of the Fantasy Feast Eatin' Podcast presented by SaxUnderwear.com/Tucker. Never had anything like this. It's a true game changer. I implore you to at least try one pair so you can change your life as well. As well as OmahaSteaks.com, putting Ross in the search bar so that all your wildest food dreams can come true. We do have to announce the last two contestants for the MyFFPC.com League for July. The drum roll, please. D.A. Doggin, who sent — that's actually an awesome name if you think about it. D.A. Doggin sent me multiple Amazon.com purchases. Of course, you can just go to RossTucker.com where the Amazon banner ad is for that. Excellent stuff. As well as Stu McCrone, who described himself as a Canadian who lives in Korea and ordered Omaha Steaks. I didn't know Omaha Steaks delivered to Korea. It's amazing. Anyway, Stu, DA, you guys are the last two contestants for the MyFFPC League, which we'll kick off early in the month of July, but it never stops. We're already starting to take contestants next week for our next league, so keep them coming. Take advantage of any of our sponsors or the Amazon and hit me up, ross@rostucker.com. I know why you're here. You're here to hear Evan, not me, tell you about our awesome sponsors. He's Evan Silva of Roto World fame, at Evan Silva on Twitter, and he typically gets the guests. I got last week's guest. I got Todd, the Tuckhead and Fantasy Feast listener. This week, though, Evan, we got Scott Barrett from Pro Football Focus. Why do we have him? Why is he on the show?
Yeah, this is some serious next-level analysis. This is stuff that no one else is talking about except for Scott Barrett. I know he is an extreme grinder, incredible work ethic. I've read a ton of his articles this off season to prepare for this interview, and he's got a ton of charts he's always pumping out on Twitter. You got to follow him at Scott Barrett DFB, and this is going to be a killer interview. You're going to learn a lot about specific players' tendencies and overall player tendencies when it comes to cornerback wide receiver matchups.
All right, let's do it.
Big Eater of the Week.
Well, as promised, very excited to be joined by Scott Barrett, senior fantasy football analyst for Pro Football Focus. You can check him out on Twitter at Scott Barrett DFB. Calls himself in his Twitter profile an NFL sabermetrician, as well as the inventor of Dank Stats, Actual Opportunity, Bell Cow Report, DFB Matrix, etc. I got a couple questions for you, Scott, before Evan hammers you on the serious stuff. Number one is, what does the DFB stand for in at Scott Barrett DFB?
Oh, man. So my original Twitter handle was Dude Fantasy Bro, which was a moniker I got from my buddy. And I had that for like 3 or 4 years and nobody wanted to follow me. And then I changed it to Scott Barrett DFB. And in like a year, I've gained 16,000 followers.
I love it. So you were Dude Fantasy Bro. Now you're at Scott Barrett DFB. Well, speaking of Dude Fantasy Bro, my sources tell me, Scott, that we were scheduled to have you on last week, but that 9 a.m. was too early because you were somewhere having a real good time the evening before. Can you confirm or deny?
I plead the fifth. I don't want to self-incriminate. But yeah, I think that was the FSTAs last week. So I was having a good time probably with Pat Thorman, Jeff Ratcliffe, Graham Barfield, James Simpson, and a bunch of other fun people inside the industry.
Dude, if you, first of all, if 9:15 was too early to come on the show, then Dude Fantasy Bro is the best Twitter handle I've ever heard. That is amazing. By the way, you know why else I like you, Scott? Because I'm looking at your Twitter profile page, and you have two incredible pictures. One is of my former teammate, JP Lossman. I don't really know why you have him there. Maybe it's the bad mustache. And then the guy on the right, I know it. It's on the tip of my tongue, but I cannot come up with who it is. Who is it? Tell me.
So I think you're wrong on JP Lossman. It's Kyle Orton and Matt Jones.
Oh, my gosh. You're right. It is Kyle Orton. Wow. I never realized Kyle Orton looks so much like JP Lossman.
He didn't age too gracefully in those Buffalo years.
No, I thought, wow, JP really put on. He looks chubby in that picture. That's amazing. All right. So enough about that stuff. I know people didn't come to hear me bust your chops or talk about your profile page. They want the nitty gritty. Evan tells me you are a strength of schedule guru, among a million different things. So I always like to get the guy's background before I let Evan dive into the thick grass, as they call it. So how'd you get the gig, man? I mean, where are you from? How'd you get the gig as senior fantasy football analyst for Pro Football Focus? That's awesome.
Yeah, I'm from New Jersey. Been playing fantasy since I was like 10 years old. Started writing maybe 5 years ago. I was a baseball guy for a number of years. Then I moved over to football to try and build a following. And I just kind of, you know, wasn't really well known, really bad at self-promotion. And then I got the gig at PFF 2 years ago. And it's just been an uphill climb since. And a month ago, they offered me a full-time job, which is my dream come true. It's awesome. I wake up and then I move a foot over to my desk and write articles in my underwear, and it's amazing.
Dude, that sounds like my life. See, we're sharing a brain on this one. And obviously, one of the things that you do that caught Evan's attention is your strength of schedule stuff. So I kind of want you to give an overview before Evan, you know, gets into the details a little bit of how you approach strength of schedule stuff and why you think it's so important.
Yeah, specifically with the wide receiver position, I spend a lot of time looking at opposing cornerbacks and the quality of those cornerbacks, the quality of the wide receiver. Are these wide receivers very cornerback sensitive? Meaning, are these guys who really struggle against good cornerbacks really dominate weaker cornerbacks? So I spent a lot of time looking at that. You know, the DFB matrix was a breakdown of, you know, schedules, where defenses are allowing the highest percentage of their fantasy points to tight ends, to left wide receivers, slot wide receivers, right wide receivers, pass catching running backs, running backs on the ground, different things like that. And then I also, you know, I'm working on a series right now looking at wide receivers who had the easiest and toughest cornerback schedules last year by a number of different metrics. And I also built out strength of schedule for the 2017 season to look at which outside wide receivers and which slot wide receivers had the easiest and toughest matchups next season.
Evan, it's all you, bro. I love it, by the way, Scott. Get him, Evan.
Yeah, there are always like each week, especially in daily fantasy, there are a couple of guys who I always want to read before I kind of decide who I think that a receiver is going to match up with. And it's Jeff Ratcliffe. He does a good article on cornerback matchups at Pro Football Focus. Scott, of course, pours over this stuff, and Mike Clay, who's now at ESPN, and they all do excellent jobs breaking down the cornerback receiver matchups. And that's really why I wanted to get Scott on the show today. Scott, I know you've put in a lot of time and work into examining cornerback and wide receiver matchups, their predictive value, and how we can apply them into our DFS lineup decisions. Based on the work that you've done, when do you think that cornerback wide receivers matchups matter the most? You know, when should we really be concerned, either positively or negatively, about cornerback wide receiver matchups?
So in redraft, I'm really only doing it to break ties. Like, if you have Odell Beckham Jr., and even if he's going up against an elite cornerback like a Josh Norman, you're still going to start him in your lineup. But for DFS specifically, I'm only really concerned with the polar extremes. Let's say around the top 25 or bottom 25 cornerbacks in the league. And then I'm going to determine that by a few different factors, like PFF coverage grade, fantasy points allowed per snap, route, or target.
Awesome. So we're looking at the extremes. You know, if a cornerback is really, really bad, we want to target them. If he's really, really good, we want to try to avoid them where we can. In the middle, you know, hey, if a cornerback's number 48 versus number 76, you know, I'm not sure that it's that big of a deal. I think it's worth discussion, but it's probably not going to help us a whole lot predictively. Scott, when examining cornerback wide receiver matchups historically, is there a certain type of receiver that tends to struggle against better cornerbacks? And if so, can you give us some examples?
Yeah. So one thing I looked at was over the past 10 seasons, looked at all wide receivers and how they fared against top 20 graded cornerbacks. So guys who did really well against elite cornerbacks were guys like Antonio Brown, Jordy Nelson, Doug Baldwin, Odell Beckham Jr., Percy Harvin. But then guys who especially struggled against elite cornerbacks over the past decade were, in order, Darius Heyward-Bey, Allen Robinson, Ted Ginn, Torrey Smith, and then a few other names you've never heard of. And we'll get to Allen Robinson a little later, I think, but I want to focus on those other names. Those guys are all considered elite deep threats. But something I've noticed is that typically with these guys, and Brandon Cooks is an exception here, is that it doesn't really matter how fast or slow the opposing cornerback is. What matters is how good he is. Like, these guys are kind of just, you know, more of a one-trick pony. Like, Torrey Smith's not this fantastic route runner. He's just, you know, really fast, really good as a deep receiver. And, you know, these really good cornerbacks don't typically fall for that one trick.
Really interesting. So, A.J. Green led all wide receivers in receiving yards and fantasy points before a hamstring tear cut his 2016 season short. Was there anything that stood out to you about A.J. Green's season in particular? People are still kind of cautious to regard him as being in that same tier as Odell Beckham and Antonio Brown. And I think it's because he's had a few injury problems in recent years. But what are your thoughts on A.J. Green?
Yeah, I had him above Mike Evans in my initial rankings, and I caught some heat for that. But after doing this study, you know, it's not even close anymore. I definitely have him closer to that first tier than in that second tier with Evans. So like you said, he led all wide receivers in fantasy points per game prior to his injury. But also remarkably, he had the toughest wide receiver schedule in the league last year. You could look at that by a ton of different data points, by average PFF grade of opposing corner on each route or each target, average fantasy points allowed per route of opposing corner, percentage of routes or percentage of targets against top 25 cornerbacks. You can look at it a ton of different ways, but really all it does is suggest that his 2016 season was really, really special. And then if you look at his schedule for next season, the data suggests it's just average. So at least it looks like it's going to improve. But that's really only looking at last season's fantasy points surrendered. And a lot of those teams got worse, like Houston lost Boye. And if you look inside the division, Browns, Steelers, Ravens, none of those guys really have particularly imposing secondaries.
So A.J. Green had the toughest or one of the toughest schedules among wide receivers last year. Adam Thielen had the easiest strength of schedule per your research. What do you think that means? Does that mean that we shouldn't put as much stock into Adam Thielen's 2016 breakout season? Or just what are your general thoughts on him as a player?
So that's definitely the thing. You know, because he had the easiest strength of schedule, you want to discount how good he was. But then again, at the same time, he led all wide receivers in fantasy points per target over expectation, meaning fantasy points like over what's expected based on that super easy schedule. So he was just so insanely efficient that he kind of just completely made up for that super easy schedule. And he was hyper efficient by a number of different metrics. He joined Michael Thomas as the only two wide receivers to rank top 20 in yards per route run, yards per target, drop rate, and wide receiver rating. You know, they just signed him to a 3-year, $17 million contract with an additional $10 million in performance-related bonuses. That's another positive sign and indicator that he's going to see an uptick in volume. What is concerning is that he scored 22.6% of his total receiving fantasy points in just one game against Green Bay, which was the worst secondary in the league last year. So I think he's, you know, probably going to regress in terms of efficiency, but I do think there's going to be a nice uptick in volume this year.
So although he had that easy schedule, what's important is that he smashed that easy schedule.
Exactly. He totally smashed it.
Yeah. He fully capitalized on it. And I mean, I think he's good, man. I mean, I always thought he was good. Like he would be one of our favorite dudes to play in preseason DFS because he'd be on the field and he was good. You know, and the quarterbacks that were out there, you know, even those backup the backup guys, they knew he was good, so they'd be throwing to him. So some of your most interesting findings about wide receiver production over the past 3 years have involved Dez Bryant. Can you discuss what you found out about Dez after looking at him over the past few seasons?
Yeah, so this is the one I was bragging to you about all week. Once you told me you wanted to get me on, I was like, oh, I'm going to blow your mind with this Dez Bryant stat. So hopefully I do. But so over the past 3 seasons, on a per-target or per-route run basis, he's been the most cornerback-sensitive wide receiver in the league, and it hasn't been close. So among all 51 wide receivers with enough targets to qualify over the last 3 seasons, he has the greatest differential between his production against top 25 cornerbacks and bottom 25 cornerbacks. So he averages on 61 targets over the span, 1.21 fantasy points per target against top 25 cornerbacks, and then 3.3 fantasy points per target against bottom 25 cornerbacks. And if you look at this on a per route run basis, it says the same thing. He's at the top of the list by a lot, and it's not really close. Other guys on that list, Dante Moncrief, Torrey Smith, Stephon Diggs. What's really profound here for me is that not only is this just over, you know, a 3-season sample, but in each of the past 3 seasons, he's been one of the top 10 most cornerback sensitive wide receivers in the league. So although the target sample is only 110, you know, it's repeated itself in each of the last 3 seasons. And I think this is massive for DFS. Like, I don't think that their pricing algorithms really affect in specific cornerback play. I think they just look at opposing defenses. But if you know that Dez Bryant is going to be shadowed by an elite cornerback, you just want to stay away. But then if he's up against, you know, he's supposed to run the majority of his routes against a weak, you know, potentially bottom 25 cornerback, then you just want to load up.
Yeah, so this is particularly interesting because Dez starts off the 2017 season in, like, maybe the most difficult possible scenario. He faces the Giants, Janoris Jenkins, who he struggled against Janoris Jenkins. That's in week one. Week two, Broncos. So he probably won't see a whole lot of Chris Harris in that game, but he'll probably get a lot of Talib and Bradley Roby, who's really underrated. And then the Cardinals in week three, Patrick Peterson. So it's not hard to imagine Dez really, really starting off slow. I mean, I think almost any receiver would be likely to start off slow, but based on how he historically has struggled against big-time cornerbacks, he's at particular risk of starting slow. How do you plan to approach him in DFS or season-long? I mean, you know, do you think he's going to be a good buy low after that window, or how are you approaching him?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I'd probably look to, you know, if I didn't draft him, I'd look to buy low heading into week four then. And like I said, in DFS, I'm going to try and wait for those softer matchups.
One of the coolest things you did to identify wide receiver schedule strength and make it more player specific was to break up the strength of schedule for outside receivers versus slot receivers. What we usually see is like fantasy points allowed to opposing receivers. But what Scott did was he broke it up and separate, because at this, especially at this point of, you know, how the evolution of the NFL, slot receiver is really a different position from outside receiver. They're facing different cornerbacks. We do not see very many cornerbacks that play on the outside move into the slot. And the body types are usually much different, and what coaches are looking for at those positions is much different. I mean, just you have to win in a different way if you're playing outside versus if you are playing in the slot. Can you talk about how you went about separating the schedule strength for the perimeter receivers versus the slot receivers?
Yeah, so I saw like articles like that, and just what bothered me was like, so Green Bay allowed the most fantasy points per game to opposing wide receivers, but against outside wide receivers, they also allowed the most. But against slot wide receivers, they were fairly average. They ranked 16th most, and that's fantasy points allowed to wide receivers running routes from the slot. And so what I did was I just broke down fantasy points per game allowed by those two positions and came out with two different schedules or projections.
Awesome. So one tendency I've noticed is that when a defense is good at defending tight ends, it can increase the likelihood of a wide receiver's having a big game or vice versa. And from playing NBA DFS, I think this sort of scenario can translate across sports, because very often, like when a big-time scorer is being defended by one of the league's best defenders, it can lead to more usage for a complementary player who then has a shot at a bigger game. Like, I don't know, say Patrick Beverley, you know, one of the best defensive point guards in the league, is squaring off with John Wall. You know, it can lead to more usage for Bradley Beal, who then maybe has a better shot at a bigger game. So are there any teams in particular where you noticed that a perimeter receiver has a very hard schedule and then the slot receiver has a really easy schedule? Or vice versa?
Yeah, Willie Snead comes to mind. He had the third easiest strength of schedule, or he is the third easiest strength of schedule among all slot wide receivers this year. And then Ted Ginn and Michael Thomas have the seventh toughest schedule for outside wide receivers. And Snead was kind of just a guy I was targeting anyway. You know, he recorded 184 fantasy points, which was the third most ever by or third most of the past decade by a team's wide receiver three. And I don't think Ginn's going to take all of Cook's missing 113 targets. So, yeah, I'm definitely excited about his potential this season.
Yeah, Willie Snead just keeps checking boxes, man. Corey Coleman is a popular breakout pick after losing a lot of time to injuries last season. It was a small sample, but did anything stand out to you about Corey Coleman's rookie year? And is he a guy that you're looking at targeting this season?
So I'm not really targeting him. And yeah, he, you know, he had injuries and caught passes from three different, you know, not very good quarterbacks. But yeah, his season was super inefficient. He had just three receptions of 25 or more yards last season, which ranked 73rd. Among wide receivers. And then those three plays came against Sharice Wright and Nolan Carroll. And that accounted for 39% of his total yards last season. Both Wright and Carroll graded among our bottom 20 cornerbacks. And then without those three plays, he would have ranked last in the league in yards per target.
So just not a whole lot of positivity to pull away from Corey Coleman's rookie year, unfortunately. Marvin Jones is another interesting guy heading into his second year with the Lions. He was easily last year's biggest early season tease. Can you explain exactly what happened with Marvin Jones? Why was he crushing it early, and then why did he fall off, and then basically was never even heard from again?
Yeah, I mean, through the first 3 weeks of the season, he led all wide receivers in fantasy points with 71. But then over the next 14 weeks, he ranked just 63rd with 102 fantasy points. In hindsight, I think it's fairly obvious. We look at where those 71 fantasy points came from. It was against 42.5 of those 71 fantasy points came against Demaryius Randall, Parrish Cox, and Josh Hawkins. Hawkins would go on to play just 16 more snaps over the course of the season, while Cox and Randall were two of PFF's five worst graded cornerbacks last season. You know, Jones kind of still had that easy schedule throughout the rest of the year. He just didn't really capitalize it. He's not someone I'm too excited about in redraft this year. I prefer Ted Ginn, who's kind of at a similar price tag in redraft leagues.
Like it. Stephon Diggs is a guy who's had some big splits since entering the league relative to the strength and weakness of his cornerbacks faced. Can you discuss his splits and, you know, is this something that we can use predictively?
I'm not sure, but it is a cool chart I came up with. So over the past decade, no cornerback has had a larger discrepancy than Stephon Diggs when looking at fantasy points per target against positive versus negatively graded cornerbacks. This is on a 71 plus 61, whatever that math is, target sample, you know, which isn't super high. So maybe it is just variance, but I'm not sure. You know, like last season, he, just like Marvin Jones, just like Adam Thielen, scored a crazy high percentage of his fantasy points in one game against Green Bay last year. But the good thing with this is even if he is super cornerback sensitive, I don't know how much this is going to matter for this season because he's going to be in the slot, typically weaker cornerbacks. And then the Vikings have the second easiest schedule for slot wide receivers this season.
Ooh, that's awesome. I know you have some strong opinions on Allen Robinson and how good Allen Robinson actually is. Can you expand?
Sure. So I'm not saying he's terrible, but I am saying the data suggests he is way overpriced right now, especially in dynasty leagues, but in redraft as well. And the data suggests either he's not very efficient, in which case he's overpriced, or Blake Bortles isn't very efficient when passing to him, in which case he's overpriced. So I'm going to look at this by a few different ways. So garbage time, right? So no wide receiver scored a higher percentage of his fantasy points when trailing by seven or more points over the past three seasons. That defense is, you know, kind of vastly improved. I think they're a top eight defense in NFL 10 leagues. So there's going to be less garbage time for him now. And then on top of that, the team drafted a running back in the top five picks. I don't think they're going to be one of the seven most pass happy teams like they were last season. So, you know, just volume in general should go down. Marquise Lee was far more efficient than him last season. I think, you know, outproducing him in total yards from scrimmage, but had like 25 fewer targets or 30 fewer targets. But here's the real reason I'm bringing this up and why I was off of him heading into last year. So the prior season, he had 32 targets against our top 20 graded cornerbacks, and he averaged 0.68 fantasy points per target. On 23 targets against bottom 25 graded cornerbacks, he averaged 3.1 fantasy points per target. So 4.4 times as much. This is by far the largest discrepancy for any wide receiver that year, which really, you know, kind of had me off. Okay, so he had this great year. He was pretty efficient. He scored so many fantasy points, but so much of it came against just these really bad cornerbacks, and he really struggled against really good ones. And then people are saying he is this elite wide receiver one. I was like, I'm not so sure about that. And then last season, it was the same exact thing. Before Sharice Wright got benched in week five, he allowed 72 fantasy points into his coverage through four games, which is more than any wide receiver had scored up to that point. And then Antoine Blake was our second worst graded cornerback two seasons ago, and he played just a small limited role in 2016. So we take away only the targets Allen Robinson saw against Wright in week three and against Blake in week 16, Allen Robinson would have fallen from 26th in fantasy points at the position to 50th. You know, This is a guy who ranks seventh in at the position in targets. So, you know, that's a big concern for me. Really, really too cornerback sensitive. And he's being drafted far too close to his season two seasons ago rather than what we saw last year.
Wow, that's crazy, man. That's some next level analysis. Good stuff, Scott. Is there anybody, and this is the last question, is there anybody that you are specifically targeting this year based on strength of schedule for 2017, or are there any wide receivers that you are specifically avoiding based on schedule strength for this year?
So one guy I'm targeting for sure is Pierre Garçon. The 49ers have the second easiest strength of schedule for outside wide receivers. You know, there's just a bunch of other reasons to be excited about him too. Since I'm a huge Kyle Shanahan fan, and since Shanahan's first offensive coordinator job in 2008, his wide receiver one that season. So we're looking at Andre Johnson twice, Santana Moss, Jabbar Gaffney, Pierre Garçon twice, Andrew Hawkins, and Julio Jones twice. So his wide receiver one has averaged 16.5 fantasy points per game. That would have ranked ninth best at the position last season. The last time Garçon played under Kyle Shanahan, he led the league in receptions and ranked 11th in fantasy points. Given, you know, Shanahan's history as an offensive play caller, the general lack of target competition, and then on top of it, the second easiest strength of schedule, there's a lot to be excited about him at his current ADP, which I think is like wide receiver 40. And then just a few guys to be, you know, cautious about. Kansas City has by far the worst strength of schedule for outside wide receivers this season. And then right behind them, you get, you know, the Eagles and Denver and Oakland. And, you know, Denver doesn't really have a reliable slot wide receiver unless you're as excited about Carlos Henderson as maybe I am. And same thing with Oakland. They don't really have a slot wide receiver. So that's kind of disappointing for Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, Emmanuel Sanders, and Demaryius Thomas.
Really, really interesting stuff, Scott, especially on Dez Bryant and Allen Robinson. I guess my question would just be, even like, you know, we've been doing a lot of MFLs or best balls. How much do you weight this information as opposed to, you know, when you're making your drafting decisions? I know a lot of this is for daily stuff, but for season long stuff or best ball, how much do you weight your data?
So, you know, it's something I definitely look at, and it's like a puzzle piece of a larger picture for sure. You know, looking at Dez Bryant splits, let's say, or Stephon Diggs splits, I'll also then look at how consistent a player's role was and how consistent his fantasy production was. If a guy wasn't very consistent, you know, maybe I'll bump him up more in best ball leagues rather than a standard redraft league. Or if I have, you know, like just a lot of high variance wide receivers and I want someone with a high floor, I'll look at that as well. But yeah, mostly for the cornerback stuff, this is mostly just DFS only, or to split ties in redraft leagues.
Scott, you're the man. Dude, fantasy bro, that was awesome. Check him out. As usual, totally blown away with the information that we get from the guests that Evan gets on a weekly basis. Check him out on Twitter, at Scott Barrett, DFB. Let's get him up to 20,000. This is a guy that not only has a ton of information, but could not come on a podcast at 9:15 because of the volume of daddy sodas and more potentially that he was having the night before, which that means he's one of us. Scott, thanks so much. We really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, guys.
That'll do it for the Fantasy Feast Eaten podcast for this week. Unbelievable stuff. Really impressive from Scott. Evan, you did it again. Thoroughly enjoyed that. And I love, I don't want to say myth-breaking, but I love when you have data that supports strong opinions that are different from the norm. We can always answer your questions, by the way, if you have specific questions. Just send us an email, ross@rostucker.com, taking advantage of one of the sponsors over at rostucker.com, whether it's Saks Underwear, Amazing, Omaha Steaks, Delicious, or whatever. iTunes rankings comments always really help us as well. You can comment and say, hey, their guests are amazing. Right now, though, I'm stuffed. We're done.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Feast Podcast. Make sure to also subscribe to the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Even Money, and the College Draft Podcast, all available on iTunes at rostucker.com or wherever podcasts can be found.
So I've been telling you guys about TrueCar for a while now, and what's amazing about it is as soon as my wife said, honey, I need to get a new car, I said, TrueCar, because they have the information on anything that's been sold in your area. Think about it. 3 million cars sold, over 13,000 dealers, over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available, average savings of over $3,000 off MSRP. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the car you want. And here's the key. TrueCar will show you what other people in your area paid for the car you want. Now you know what a fair price is, so you can feel confident. Before we even started looking, she was looking at Explorers, Tahoes. I said, hey, look at TrueCar, and you can find out exactly what other people have paid in the area. It is awesome. TrueCar customers are more likely to enjoy a faster buying process when they connect with TrueCar certified dealers. Plus, TrueCar users save an average of over $3,000 off MSRP. When you're ready to buy, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features not available in all states.